Welcome to the Operation Move podcast. My name is Zoe and I'm back after being sucked into the school holiday vortex. It was a bit of a crazy school holidays because the Melbourne Marathon was on the last weekend of the school holidays, and when I planned the trip, in my mind, I'd thought that because I came back on Monday evening, I thought that the kids wouldn't be going back to school until Tuesday, because that's what happens most terms. On the first day, there's a student free day, but not on term four. So I had not quite envisaged me not being here on their first day back and sort of like the logistics that go with that. And so between school holidays, getting ready for the race, and then coming back and like not sort of having any turnaround time to kind of like go all in on getting them like back into the routine of school, which is challenging at best when they've had like 2 weeks of no wearing shoes and not having to get dressed and not having to wake up and all the rest of it. And also because of the way the weekend panned out, I had like 2 short weeks. So the week before with getting ready to go was like a 4-day week. And then the week coming back was a 4-day week. And it was chaotic at best. So I'm just sort of starting to feel like I'm getting back into a bit of a rhythm now, but it's taken a while. So today I thought I'd talk a little bit about what happens when you have to let go of your A goal. Because there are so many variables in races, and oftentimes you do have to let go of that first goal that you've been working towards, but you want to do it in a way where it still feels like a celebration of your training, like a culmination, and like it doesn't sort of feel like a defeat of some kind. And the week of the race, my husband got a cold, and I joked about putting him in some kind of like bubble to protect me from getting sick, but I felt good and I thought I would be fine. And I did my last workout, and that also went quite well, so I felt good about that. And I seemed to be, and oftentimes, like, it's probably often like that last workout that's the most risky, because you have like temporarily for like about 24 hours after something intense, you will have like a reduced immune system. But I felt okay, and then I didn't feel okay. And I was like, it's fine. It's a cold. Like, he's not that sick. And I've still got time to bounce back. But as it wore on, and it wasn't even that bad, like it's certainly nowhere near of like the Gold Coast kind of like bronchitis situation, but it was enough that I was like, well, there's no point in running at this stage because I'm just going to reduce my chances of getting better. So I just stopped doing everything at that stage and just tried to rest as much as I could. Keep my fluids up, do all of those things, take the vitamins, you know, just like control the controllables. But it just kept getting a little bit worse. And so by the time I got down to Melbourne on Friday, it was in my chest. And I was like, okay, well, this is not good. And I don't really have quite enough time to turn this around. And when that happens, you can be in a real sort of dilemma about what to do with that information, which is probably also like one of the greatest advertisements for having a coach, because I was staying with a friend of mine, and she's like, well, what would you tell a client of yours if they were in your shoes? And I said the same thing that every coach says. I said, well, it depends, you know, it depends on like context, it depends on, you know, like if this is their only event for the year or if there have been loads of events. It depends on what they want out of it. It just depends. And my concern for myself was, one, I didn't want to kind of like put myself in the same position that I did after the Gold Coast, where it took a really long time to recover after running sick. And part of that, a big part of that, is that the marathon is very different to the half marathon, just like with the time domain. And I was a lot more sick. So I was aware that that was going on, but it just took so long to feel better. And I felt like I'd finally started to, you know, get rolling a bit after that. So I didn't want that to happen again. But also, I think the other side of it was that I'm not someone who I would consider like a natural racer, in that I enjoy the aspect of it where I'm testing my fitness. That part I enjoy. I enjoy it usually while I'm doing it, but it's the kind of thing, like, it's by nature of like of it being a race, it's like a maximum effort, and so it's hard. And so, and there are certainly aspects of that I enjoy about that difficulty and that challenge, but there's also a very deep part of me that likes to avoid that happening. So my concern with things like when little things pop up, like, oh, you know, like this hasn't gone 100% according to plan, is that there is certainly an aspect of my personality which is always looking for an easy out. Like, oh, if I'm sick, then I just don't have to do this and I can just go for a nice easy jog and it'll be fine. So I wanted to know that that wasn't happening here, that this wasn't some kind of like, oh, I don't want to race, and so now I'm sick and I guess I can't, and, you know, whatever. Like, I didn't want to be taking the easy way out, because what I wanted was a really good race to finish the year. And I knew that it wasn't going to be a PB because I was not in that kind of shape, and you can kind of tell that from training. But I still wanted it to be something that was sort of in line with the training that I'd done and in line with the year that I'd had. And I just wanted to have a feeling of crossing the line, knowing that it was a really good effort and it was a good race, and I wanted to enjoy it. Because last year in Melbourne, it was just one of those things. There was no reason as to why it was. I had a rough day out there, but I had a rough day. And probably the only time that I've considered walking off course, and I considered that multiple times. And so it was also sort of wanting to sort of relive that a bit and do it a bit differently. So I checked in with my coach and I just said, look, these are the symptoms. Should I still race or should we adjust? And he's like, no, with no racing. And so aim for what like the vast majority of my long runs are, which is high zone 2 to low zone 3 for heart rate, which only works for me with, since I've had the chest strap, because the watch wrist heart rate isn't accurate enough to do that. It sort of jumps all over the place, or it'll read really low or it'll read really high. So the chest strap makes a big difference. You just got to be pretty proactive with chafing. So effectively, for me, that's sort of like the, like the low aerobic zone to the high aerobic zone, where like the high aerobic zone would be kind of like marathon pace. So it's more looking at like doing a half marathon, a kind of like marathon effort. And I had thought that that would be kind of in line with someone else who I was coaching with, what her race was going to look like. And it sort of like seemed like that would be achievable for me, because, you know, I thought that I would probably be able to run at around, you know, like 450 pace ish. But I did the first 2 or 3 kilometers with her and I was like, whoa, this is way too hot for me. And I could just feel like how my body was doing. I could feel that I was heating up a bit too quickly. I could feel the congestion, and I was like, right, okay, we're just going to not worry about running with anyone else. I'm just going to go completely on heart rate, and I'm going to get water at all of the stations, because obviously with being unwell, like dehydration is like more of a risk than what it would normally be. And so I did that, which was really good. It was, I basically just had the plan of, okay, like I'm going to like treat this as a progression run. So I want to be at the top of zone 2 by the time I'm, you know, like about about two thirds of the way through the run, and for the last third, then we can push it out a little bit and kind of like go zone three and go like a bit above the sort of like marathon pace-ish thing. And that was cool. And at us, and that was sort of like working really well for me in terms of staying in the moment, just focusing on what I could do on the day, enjoying the people, enjoying Melbourne, enjoying the scenery, because it was a gorgeous, gorgeous day for running. And it was really nice to be doing something that felt like a really honest effort, but also didn't feel like it was so hard that I couldn't appreciate what I was doing at the same time. And there was a certain point in the race of probably around 14 or 15 kilometers where I was kind of vaguely aware of like around about where my pace was, in that I figured I was sort of like averaging like about 5 minute pace. And I knew that the year before, which definitely wasn't like a PB and it wasn't even a course PB, but I knew the year before I had run in at around 4:59. And I thought, and I had thought as my sort of B goal, oh, you know, like it would be cool to, you know, just do better than that time. And so there was this moment where I almost got sucked into that and I was like, oh, if I just speed up just a little bit, I could catch that. And then I kind of like caught myself in that thought process and I was like, no, that doesn't matter. I'm focusing in on what I'm doing here. I'm not overreaching. I'm staying within my plan and I'm not going to worry about the result. So I pulled back from that, which I was, by the time I got to like kilometer 20, I was grateful for, because it felt kind of hard, and which was good because it's sort of like I couldn't have the race that I wanted, but it could still feel like a race for how I was doing on the day, which was cool. And so then the funny thing about that was that when I actually crossed the line, it was still a better time than last year, because last year I'd started way too far back and I spent all of this time weaving. So I'd had to run like 21.6 kilometers. And because with this one, I only had to run like 21.3, it ended up being a slightly slower average pace. But in terms of my time, it was actually a faster time by about 30 seconds, which was also like a cool thing to happen, even though if that hadn't happened, I still would have felt really good about the run. Like it was kind of like funny that that ended up happening, but I felt really good with the whole thing. Like I felt sort of like I felt good. I felt like I was working. I didn't feel like I had a whole heap left in the tank at the end, which is a really nice feeling. I felt like I was able to, because I've been done it so many times now, I felt like I was sort of able to take advantage of what I knew about the course, like knowing that there's that, you've got to go like up and over that bridge in the last kilometer, which is unpleasant. But the kilometer before that, there's a lot of downhill. So sort of it was like about like just taking advantage of those sections of the course where I could. And then it was just about enjoying the day and not sort of chasing a time, or, you know, not being disappointed with the fact that I was unwell, or, you know, like it was good. And I think particularly having being pretty in tune with my body and feeling that I was sort of like overheating early, that was also kind of like a good feeling, because it was like, yep, I'm not well. This isn't a cop out, and I'm just dealing with what I'm given today. So I guess what I'm saying is, even when you like, time goals are great because they will sort of like keep you motivated in training, and they will sort of like push you out of your comfort zone and everything like that. But ultimately, those goals are sort of like, it's sort of like a cue for how you want to feel on the day. And you can have that feeling even if the circumstances mean like that time is not going to be a happening thing. And I think that concentrating on how you want to feel about it is important. And I think that the fact that I knew how I wanted to feel about it going in, and I was also realistic enough to know that I was pretty impacted. So, you know, I'm not going to just be able to go out and do the paces that I had been doing in training. Like, it just wasn't going to happen. And I have the benefit of it being the kind of distance where there's not loads and loads of recovery time. So, you know, if I'd wanted to, after sort of after getting better, I could go out and do another one, which I'm not going to do, just because I think that I get to this time of year and it's a great time of year for a reset, and I don't really feel that there's anything that I didn't sort of do this year. Like, I'm really, really happy with my Canberra run and the Gold Coast run, and I don't think anything that I could do now is going to add anything to that. So I think it's a great time to sort of, you know, do all my off-season stuff and just enjoy that I had a really good year with getting through all of my rehab stuff. And yet that's still ongoing, because I think it's always going to be ongoing. But the fact is that I was pretty much able to run the whole year, which is really fantastic. And I think that was my biggest challenge with the injury, was that I'd sort of like, I'd gotten myself into really good shape, and then to sort of lose that and not have that to build on. Well, now I do get to build on it. So that is a really cool feeling to have at the end of the year too. But also, after all of that sort of settled, if you are in a situation where you've had an A goal and you've had to say goodbye to it due to, you know, a break in training, sickness, injury, whatever, I think that it's also a good opportunity after the dust has settled to kind of look at, like, okay, why did that happen? Because most things, like, it's not necessarily like everything is controllable, but there are things that influence other things. And so for me, that was part of the debrief process with my coach after the run, was, okay, like, what went well and what could be better? And, you know, so I can then look at and go, okay, yeah, you could say that I can't control getting sick, which you can't, but the fact is that I would say, you know, you look at last year where I don't think I got sick at all, and then this year I got sick twice, and which is not a big deal. Like, I still get the flu shot and everything, so it's just sort of like viruses and colds and stuff like that. But I think that you can also really look at it and go, okay, what's different? And I can see that there are certain things that have sort of contributed to my stress levels and my ability to recover that were a lot better last year than they were this year. And that meant this year I was just more susceptible. So moving forward, it's about going, okay, I know that this is something that tends to happen if my stress levels are high, or if I haven't had enough sleep, or whatever else, and like, what can I put in place so that I do recover better, and so that when I am in a situation where somebody has a cold, I don't automatically catch it. And also, you know, just look at it from the point of view of looking after my body, not just how it impacts on running, but also look at, okay, you know, like, these are happening at during times of stress, so how can I manage my stress better so that I'm a, you know, healthier, happier, you know, person? You know, like, it's not just about like, oh no, you know, like, I've sort of like screwed up two races by getting a cold. It's like, what is my body trying to tell me that's not quite working? Yeah, they're all things that, you know, like, I can look at. So I looked at that and I was like, okay, you know, like, the stress management needs to be better, recovery protocols need to be better, and my diet needs to be better. And so that creates like a really nice structure to then take into the off season and work on, because a lot of times the running is a really easy thing to work on because you just do it once for the day or whatever, and then it's done. The other things take a lot more work to sort of integrate, because usually those things are the first thing to go when you get pushed for time. So, but the only way it's going to get better is if you prioritize it. So I think it is good to look back on those sorts of things and not just go, oh, well, you know, like shit happens. Usually there is a reason why that's happened. And it's kind of similar to how in training, like oftentimes you'll notice that there's a thing, a particular thing that you have a lot of resistance to or avoid. And usually there's a reason for that. Like it's not random. It's not some kind of character flaw on your part. Like usually there's a flaw somewhere. So either that programming is too aggressive, or there's just something about it that makes you uncomfortable, and you just need to sort of like dial it back and create a version of it that is comfortable enough that you don't have major resistance to, and then you can build on it. So it is really useful at this time of year to just have a bit of a look at what has happened and what you'd like to improve and what's contributed to that. Because sometimes too, it can just be, if you get sort of like frustrated too with a period of training, oftentimes it can just be, not that like you probably have consistently trained, like the training has probably been consistent in that you have been out there running or moving or doing whatever it is that you like to do consistently, but maybe the program hasn't been consistent. And so you have like tried one thing, but not for long enough of a period of time for it to work, and then change to something else. And it's a bit like how you can get into a trap in nutrition as well, where you're constantly jumping from one thing to another, but never actually doing, you know, sort of 6 months at a time to actually give it a chance to work. And then you get super frustrated because you feel like nothing works, but it's just sort of like needing to commit to some level of consistency through all of that. And it feels like you're being consistent because you're like continually working on it, but most things take a lot of time. So if there's an area within your training that you're finding frustrating, then it can also be really good to look at it and go, okay, like, is this something of like I'm not adapting, or have I just not given myself long enough and been patient enough for it to happen? And that's certainly something that, you know, like I've sort of taken a good hard look at the nutrition side of things and gone, yeah, you know, like it's been patchy at best. And a lot of times I've used the fact that like you can't out-train a bad diet, but you can get away with a lot, particularly when you have like a lot of high volume training like I do. Yeah, I can get away with a significant amount, but that's just a superficial thing, you know, like just because I don't necessarily feel it as like negatively affecting me day to day, doesn't mean it's not, because I've probably lost sense of what feeling optimum feels like. So those are the kinds of questions that you can ask after the fact, but I just wouldn't ask them sort of like too close to the event, because you kind of usually need sort of settling time. And I think that like with anything, with letting go of your A goal, you just want to make sure, like going in, that no matter what happens, you never want to finish a run and like be disappointed. Like there's going to be aspects of it that might be disappointing. It was like, oh, there was this bit where I felt like I kind of lost it a little bit. Like I remember in Canberra, I had no idea where we were going. I've never done the course before. And even though, which kind of sounds funny because you know exactly how far you're going half marathon, more or less. Like, there might be like a few hundred meters here or there that are out, but you know how far. But in that tail end, like that last sort of 3 kilometers, it's just like going on forever. And when you can't, not really sure where the finish line is, it just makes it seem longer than it is. And there was a point in there where I had a thing where I had knew that I was going fast enough. I had sort of like had in the pacing that I was on, it wouldn't actually matter if I significantly slowed down, it would still be a PB, which was kind of liberating for me to just go for it. But there was also a point in there where it was getting really, really hard. And for maybe like half a kilometer or something, like I was still running, but I was, had kind of given up. I'd given up like trying to kind of like fight for that pace at that point in time. And then that time passed and we stopped going up endless hills. And then I kind of like got it together and it's like, no, like you are at in the last, you know, like 1 or 2 kilometers or whatever it was of this race, and you are going to absolutely go for it. So you can look at anything and you can have like periods of time that might like feel that, that there's a disappointment in there, but overall, you know, you should, not should, but I would hope that you would be able to see what a massive achievement finishing something like that is, regardless of what happens. And I think also a lot of times it's easy to forget that racing takes practice. And, you know, I remember coming back into it after an injury and realizing that, like, I used to be actually quite good at it, like good at pacing, good at using water stations, you know, like good at managing myself. And it took me a while to get better at it again after I'd had all of that time off. So with setting your goals, a good thing, a good way to go into it before you even get to the race is looking at, what does success look like to me? Because oftentimes you don't ask that question, and then the risk is that you kind of go into this default level of success, that this time is successful or this time is not successful. But if you kind of look at it, like, how is, you know, like, say for example with the marathon, how is like you know, like a 4:05 marathon a failure and a 3:59 one a success? It's 6 minutes, you know, over a really, really long way. And I don't actually think, like, people like round numbers, you know, so that's why those things are there. But probably in your heart, it doesn't really matter that much, and you're sense of success is probably not as tied to that number as you think it is. So going in with going, okay, like, what does success look like? How will I know that I've succeeded? How will I know that I can be proud of my achievement? Like, what does that look like? What does that entail? What are the specifics of that? And create some context for yourself before you even go into it, because otherwise you can get to the end of it and there's way too much comparison going on, like, oh, I wanted sort of this time and this happened, or, you know, like, I finished so far behind all these other people, and, you know, and so I think that having all of that stuff in place in the beginning can really help you to see your achievement in the way that it should be seen, and the way that, like, you decide what it means. No one else decides that. It's 100% your choice what it means, because only you know, like, all the training you put in, all of the sort of like the mental demons you battled, all the times you got out of bed when you really didn't want to, and all of the things that you overcame on the way there. So you want to make sure that that's what you're going in with, is your own ideas, and not kind of like absorbing sort of like outside pressures or outside ideas. And, you know, particularly because oftentimes you're easily influenced by people who are sort of like outside the running bubble, who don't really like know particularly like how much it takes for you. So, you know, like the amount of people who've asked me when I've like gone and done a race if I won, the kids included, and like that sort of like their only marker for like if it was good or not. So you need to define that for yourself, and you need to know what it means. And once you're really clear on that, then it makes it a lot easier to enjoy the day. So I think I've probably waffled on about that for long enough. If you would like to support the podcast, you can go to patreon.com/opmove, and there are a range of options there for either exclusive content or to start customized programming or one-on-one coaching or join run club. Also just sort of set up the new website at opmove.com, so you can check that out. And we're going to be starting the walking course again shortly, which is a great intro to learn to run, which is going to start in the first week of January. So one of the benefits is if you sign up for January Learn to Run early, then you can do our introductory program, which is 8 weeks in our private Learn to Run support group. And so you can have like essentially an extra couple of months of coaching to help to get you in a really great position habit-wise to be able to do Learn to Run and make the most out of it. So you can check all of that out on the website. And as always, if there's anything at all that you'd like me to talk about on the podcast or any topics that you'd like me to cover, just message me and work it in. And I'm just going to start saying talk to you next time, because my track record with next week is not great.